E te iwi e whakarongo mai nā tēnā koutou katoa. Ko au tēnei ko Peter Lucas Jones, tō kai kawe kōrero mō tēnei wāhanga o te rā. Ko tā tātou kai kōrero, ko tahu kukutai, tētahi o ngā uri, o ngā iwi, o Ngāti Tipa, Ngāti Kino Haku, me te aupouri, ka huri atu ahau ki te kōrero mō ngā mea ko ti iaia i ona nei rā. Tahu attended Stanford University and is also the editor of a book called Indigenous Data Sovereignty Toward an Agenda. Tahu is also a driving force in the Māori data sovereignty movement, which also includes Māori academics, industry experts, and haukainga Māori. Tahu Kukutai is also the co-author of a paper called Estimated Inequities in COVID-19 Infection Fatality Rates by Ethnicity for Aotearoa New Zealand, and we're going to have a kōrero with her about that. Ka huri atu ahau ki te whakatau i tēnei o tātou tuahine. Tahu, tēnā koe i tēnei rā.
Tēnā koe, oha.
Pēhā ana te whānau.
Oh, pai ana me koe.
Oh, kānui te ora e hoa, kānui nei te ora, hari ana hau ko whai wāhi tāua te kōrero. Kia huri atu tāua ki te kaupapa kōrero. Now, a basic fact on the Māori Pandemic Group website says you are more likely to get very sick if you are over the age of 50. Can you tell us what the data suggests as why Māori are at greater risk of getting very sick from coronavirus?
Yeah, you know, he pātai tino whakahirahira tērā. So this paper that we've been working on, and this is some Māori researchers Ngā Pai o te Māramatanga working with the mathematician experts and modellers at Te Pūnaha Matatini. What this paper really looks at, it's kind of moving away from this one-size-fits-all approach to statistical modelling of COVID-19 to provide a picture of what fatality rates could look like for Māori. And that's really important because none of the modelling to date has taken account of our specific circumstances as Māori. You know, and that's a problem because we know that there are crucial differences between Māori and other groups, and Pākehā in particular. So our Māori population, you know, we're structurally younger. And this is a positive in a way when facing a virus that hits older people harder. But we also have much higher rates of comorbidities that increase the risk of severe complications and even death from COVID-19. So this is cardiovascular disease, diabetes, respiratory disease, COPD. And these comorbidities, they present for Māori at much younger ages. And we also know that structural racism in the healthcare system and unmet health needs increases the risk for our whānau. So what the statistical modelling in this paper does is it takes account of these differences, these ethnic differences in age structure, differences in experiencing adverse health outcomes at an earlier age, which we know this has been widely documented for Māori, increased risk of comorbidities and unmet healthcare need. And it gives us a picture of what Māori infection fatality rates would look like compared to other groups. And I think it's quite important to be clear about the kind of the kupu that we're using when we're talking about fatality rates and incidence rates. So what this paper does is it looks at the ratio of deaths to total infection. So we're taking the population of those who are infected and asking what percentage of those people could potentially die if they were infected. And that's different from an incidence rate, which is looking at the whole population and asking the question, what proportion of the population would become infected? So they're two different things. And we're looking at the fatality rate for those who are infected, not for how widespread infection is. And that's a key difference. You know, under lockdown conditions, of course, we've been able to effectively, you know, stop the spread of COVID-19 into our communities. And what the early modelling showed that if that hadn't happened, if there were no controls, if there were no rāhui, that it would have spread quickly. And what this paper shows that had it been allowed to spread, we would have built, as Māori would have borne the heaviest burden of that in terms of the fatality rates.
Aye, kia ora, kia ora. Now, as you've already described, Ngā Pai o te Maramatanga has collaborated with Te Pūnaha Matatini and other experts to publish a paper on the estimated inequities in COVID-19 infection fatality rates by ethnicity for Aotearoa New Zealand. It shows that infectious fatality rates could be 4 times higher for Kaumātua and Kuia Māori when compared to elderly Pākehā. Could you please explain why this is?
There's sort of two scenarios. And the first scenario adjusts for our, what you might call, age structure, for our age distribution. And what that actually, when we adjust for that, it shows that Māori have the highest fatality rate in every age group. So the overall fatality rate is about 1.15%. And overall, that's about 50% higher than for Pākehā. But the fatality rate for Māori exceeds 1% even at the 40 to 59-year-old age group. And then when you get up to our Ruruhi and Korohike, you know, up to the 80-plus years, which is my dad's age group. He just turned 80 last month, and a group of our whanaunga from Te Kau came down. But once you get to that older age group, 80-plus, the fatality rate for Māori is around 14% in these models, but only just under 7% for Pākehā. So there's a big difference, but that difference is also in every age group. And that's a really key point from this modelling. It's not just that, of course, the older the age group, the higher the risk of fatality or death amongst those who are infected. But for Māori, in every age group, the risk is higher. And even an age group where we might not necessarily expect it. The Tarahui has absolutely been, from my perspective, what this paper shows is that it was absolutely, te aratika for our people, because had COVID been allowed to spread uncontrollably into our communities, our ruruhi and korohike would have paid a very high price. And relative to other groups, Pacific people as well, not as high as Māori, but absolutely significantly higher than for Pākehā. But not just our ruruhi and korohike, also our middle-aged men and women would have also carried increased risk. And I think that's kind of an important point that's come out of this paper. There was a second scenario as well, and it was saying, well, if the age effect is driven more by comorbidities, that's the presence of cardiovascular disease and diabetes and respiratory problems, what would the fatality rates look like if it's actually more about comorbidities that are correlated with age and not age in and of itself? And when you bring in comorbidities, you see a much higher Māori fatality rate of 1.66% overall, and that's 2.5 times higher than Pākehā. So whether age in itself is the underlying factor, or whether it's the comorbidities associated with age, such as heart disease and diabetes, Māori come off the worst in both scenarios. And that's very clear in these statistical modelling.
Tahu, the paper cautions that racism in the health sector could further increase the infectious fatality rates for Māori. Would you say that the predictions in the paper could be underestimated when we think about the overall complexity of institutionalised racism?
Oh, look, yeah, absolutely. And the paper's very clear on that. It says that these estimates would only underestimate the inequities that we know from documented in many sources of structural racism and institutional, inequities that exist and that provide compounded, risk for our whānau Māori. So that's unambiguously stated in the paper, that structural racism would absolutely amplify the risk for Māori in the context of the pandemic. And I think what it also does is it really, you know, it supports that call that was made very early on from Te Rōpū Whaka Kaupapauruta, which is the Māori Pandemic Response Group, which is really our Māori experts in public health and epidemiology, our clinicians, you know, the people on the ground who have been working with our communities for a very long time and have a depth of knowledge around this. And they said really early on that equity, it must be at the forefront of the pandemic response, and that we need Māori at the decision-making table with the interests of our people at the forefront, and that it needs to be visible. And so that message around equity absolutely is supported by the modelling in this paper. And I think what it also shows is because of the increased risk for us, even at the younger ages, you know, we need to be actively protecting our communities, not just our uruhi and korohiki and those at the older ages, but actually also those who are like 50 and above.
As Māori people, both you and I understand overcrowding in our homes. And we've heard a lot about overcrowding in our homes. Cold homes moving into winter. Are these factors considered in the predictions of the paper?
That's a really good question, Peter. And this paper doesn't do everything. And what it doesn't do is it doesn't try to model the incidence of COVID-19. So it's only looking at the fatality of those who are already infected, not trying to model the infection rate itself for Māori, nor the sort of amplified, the increased risk that come with higher rates of overcrowding. And that's been really clearly evidenced in the New Zealand General Social Survey, 2013 census, and I believe that some 2018 census data on crowding may also be forthcoming despite the problems with the census. But we do know that Māori and very much Pacific whānau, particularly in Auckland, have much higher rates of overcrowding. And we also know that that kind of household living arrangements and having multiple generations living in the same household is also more prevalent for Māori. So there does need to be additional work done that looks at models, those sort of transmission pathways and the incidence for Māori and also for Pacific whānau as well. That hasn't happened yet. This was just the first starting point, but that will need to happen. I mean, and people might ask, well, it hasn't, you know, we haven't seen the sort of scenarios that have been talked about, you know, for the last couple of weeks. We haven't seen them play out. But the reason why we haven't seen them play out is because we went into lockdown really early. And so we haven't seen the infection rates and the spread into communities in ways that we had anticipated. And that's because of the rāhui. But if we didn't have that rāhui and had COVID-19 been allowed to spread into our communities, there's absolutely no question from this paper that Māori communities, Māori whānau would have paid a dear price for that. That hasn't happened so far because most of the infections have come from overseas travel and also clusters. And so the community transmission has been pretty effectively nipped in the bud compared to what it might have been. But that's no reason to be overly complacent. And I think, you know, what this paper shows is that, you know, we must still be vigilant in protecting our whānau and protecting our communities because we know that we will be disproportionately impacted if it does spread.
Aye, kia ora. Now, there's kōrero on a plan B, which says we should come out of lockdown sooner for the sake of the economy. One argument is people will die anyway, so we shouldn't be too concerned about COVID-19 because it's no worse than the flu. Considering your work on the increased rates of death for Māori, how would you respond to plan B? It's as if we should sacrifice Māori and Pacific people for the sake of the economy.
Oh, look, I think that would be a widely held perception of the sort of implications of Plan B. Is that some communities will be the ones who pay the price of going down that particular path. From my own perspective, I think it's quite despicable. We would be desperately impacted by taking that approach. I'm really glad that our Prime Minister has had the courage and the fortitude not to take that approach. I think the challenge moving ahead will be to ensure that equity and well-being and oranga remain central to our thinking, so that there's not the sort of reversion to type and having a narrow way of approaching this. I think now more than ever, we need this alternative vision of what a reset could look like for us. And what I've been really inspired by is the everyday acts of mana mutuhake and manaakitanga and leadership. And not top-down leadership, but, you know, that sort of distributed Māori leadership that is demonstrated in different ways in our communities. And I've been absolutely inspired by the everyday acts of leadership, manaakitanga, mana mutuhake that have been demonstrated in our communities by iwi, by hapu, by whānau, by marae. And, you know, that sort of collective way of thinking, of caring for each other, that ability to respond, that capacity to think about others, that's deeply embedded in our culture.
It's ingrained in us.
That's who we are.
It's very much ingrained in us. I mean, I think we're busier now, Tahu, than we were before lockdown. But taking into account, you know, packing kete āwhina, our road safety checks, our gated communities, our tikanga associated with our bubbles, because our style of living in a bubble is quite different to a Western bubble. And I think about intergenerational whānau that live across a couple of houses and how papakāinga style living has been taken into account and the way in which Māori live in bubbles. I wanted to know, what do you think the government needs to do in light of this information presented in this paper? This may well be the only information available on infectious fatality predictions for Māori and Pacific Island people right now, in the midst of this coronavirus COVID-19 crisis.
For me, one of the key take-home messages is that equity has to be right up front in the pandemic response, and that we need visible Māori leadership with the interests of our people at the forefront in that response as well. So for me, that's one sort of take-home message. Another one would be that we know that there's an incredible amount of local intelligence in our communities. You've just described some of that, you know, that so our communities know our whānau and our needs best. And in a way, one of the most effective uses of policy in this context is really to tap into that local intelligence and to support and enable it. And so this paper doesn't provide necessarily suggestions for how you should do that, but I think the implications really flow clearly from that, is that Māori whānau and communities you know, carry a heavier burden. We already know that, and in the context of a pandemic, that would be the case if it was able to spread further than it has. And so we need local decision makers, local intelligence, local responses to be informing our policy responses. So a more distributed way of thinking about that rather than a top-down way. We know that doesn't really work for us.
Not at all.
And the third message, I think, would be And this is one that the Māori Pandemic Response Group have been saying right from the outset, and I absolutely tautoko their thinking here, which is a one-size-fits-all does not work for us. We have particular characteristics. Some of those are vulnerabilities and risks, but some of those are also our collective strengths that already exist in our communities, our knowledge networks. That kremera of mine is powerful. So let's use them.
Heoi anō rā, tēnā koe I e nā kōrero, tēnā hoki koe I ou whakaaro, kua tuhia ki te kapu o te pepa, kua kōrero hia marunga I te reo irirangi I tēnei rā. Thank you for having a kōrero with us about the paper you've had a hand in writing, Estimated Inequities in COVID-19 Infection Fatality Rates by Ethnicity for Aotearoa New Zealand. Ngā manaakitanga ki a koe.
Kia ora iho, ngā mihi aroha ki a kōrero hoki.
Tēnā koe. O te rā, koia rā ko te reo kōrero a tahu kukutai, tētahi o ngā uri, o te iwi o te aupauri, e whakarongo ana koutou ki tō reo irirangi Māori, te reo irirangi o te hiko teika, ko au tēnei ko Peter Lucas Jones, noho ora mai.